You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 481. This won't make or break me. It's just my OCD. I got a record that mounts a day. Fuck me, me, I know. I won't wait around on my own. Make it, then betray it. Makes no sense to me. Words of it, still don't say it. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White, recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the show tonight, the usuals. The usuals doesn't sound like a really cool crew of secret agents.
If we were at a bar, we'd be called the Regulars.
The Regulars. Adam. But yeah, but Here Comes the Regular is such a sad song that I don't know.
Oh, such a great song.
How about the Regulators? The Regulators.
There is a clock that is in my uncle's basement that says Regulator on it, and I'm pretty sure it's a brand of old clocks or something like that, but I always thought it was the most badass name for a product. Anyways, so I'm Adam. That's Mr. Tom Trauma out of Grand Rapids, Michigan-ish, right?
Yes.
It is an ish, right? Like, you're not smack in the middle of Grand Rapids.
No, I'm a little west of town. I'm in a little bit of a suburban type area.
Well, all right, there
we go. Rural, even.
Grand Rapids West Side.
Yeah, West Side is the best side of Grand Rapids. It's where you're more likely to get beat with a sack of doorknobs than shot.
West Side.
I feel like I'd probably prefer the doorknobs, but I don't know. I haven't really held them up next to each other.
Hey, stabbings are better than shootings.
I mean, if you're going to get shot, and it's like, say it's like through the fat part of your leg, and it doesn't really intersect with anything, then maybe that's less of a pain.
Oh, most of my tats are on my legs, Adam. I don't want to get my tats messed up.
Maybe you should have thought that before you moved to West Side Grand Rapids, Tom.
Actually, you know, maybe it would be kind of cool, like the Crimson Ghost with a bullet hole in his head.
We gotta circle back to tattoos in a bit.
I might try to get shot tonight.
All right, hey, I'm
suburban. If you get shot suburban, it's most likely to be your partner, right? I'm pretty sure my wife would like to shoot me sometimes, but we'll see.
I mean, the night's young, so I mean, yes, it's not. It's like, almost not 10 that o'clock. Young. Yeah. So yeah. That was also on the show. You heard Mr. John Gentile out of Philly. Again, Philly-ish. Same sort of situation. Philly-ish, right?
Philly-ish, correct, indeed.
See, I live in such a small town that there's no ish. It's like you live here or you live. You don't.
Well, but you have a Canadian side and an American side, right?
Yeah, but that is not the same place in any stripe. No. I mean, there's a fucking gorge between the two, like a chasm. So I think if there's a chasm chasm counts as like a pretty significant disconnect. You don't have to take what shit comes up on the other side. So we're going to talk about a bunch of the stuff that popped up on punknews.org and elsewhere over the past week. Before we do that, John, is there any mail that you want to talk about?
Well, we got a lot to cover this week, so you can reach at podcast@punknews.org. But I think we've got our recurring semi-regular feature, so I think we'll use the time for that instead.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, if you do want to send us mail, podcast@punknews.org, that's how you do it. So the semi-regular feature that John brought up here is one that we struggle with because we constantly try to make sure it's not just an annoying list of things, but sometimes it is. So that is record collecting. We want to talk about cool things that you found, stuff that you've picked up, items that you have come to acquire and to cherish, and the cool stories behind them. John, you were hot to trot for this. What do you got?
Well, I'll mention three things. I guess I'll mention the most exciting thing third. The least exciting thing, the Nuns were a early San Francisco punk band. A lot of people consider them one of the first three or four San Francisco punk bands, with Merry Monday, Crime, and the Nuns. And I think those are kind of considered the first three. The Nuns have a relatively hard to find album called The Nuns, which was out on Bomb of all labels. And that's why it's hard to find.
Don't get Adam and I started on Bomb.
It's also on Posh Boy. But if you look hard enough, you can find it. It's relatively easy to find. All the Nun stuff is pretty hard to find. However, their original single, which has three tracks not on the first album, was originally released via 415 Records, and it is impossible to find. And it's got an awesome song called Savage. It's got an awesome song called Suicide Child, and another song which I probably can't mention. And I don't even know if it's cool if the band mentions it or not, because I don't know their backgrounds. But in 2020, it would probably be considered an offensive track unless the background of the band had that background as well. So I'm not going to mention it. Anyways, the single is great, and it is very rather very typical of the early West Coast punk scene. A little bit of Stooges rawness, a fair amount of offensiveness, but not offensiveness for just to be offensive, offensiveness with a certain mindset. Anyways, a Australian label called Blank Recording Company re-released it. I have to assume it's an official release, but I'm not sure that it is. But at any rate, it looks like some of the rarer Nun stuff is now back in print, and that is some of the most essential West Coast punk there is. Number two, Mata Hoople. Adam White hates them with a burning passion hotter than a thousand hells, and I love them. And Mata Hoople's first five albums were reissued in 2005, I think, on a label called Angel Air. And they included tons of bonus tracks, and those CDs are pretty hard to find. The problem is the actual mastering isn't that good, and the sound quality really isn't that – like, the crispness is there, but the body of the songs is there. The songs sound a little thin, especially my favorite early Mata Hoople track, which is called Brain Capers. And just recently, a beautiful box set with six CDs called Mental Train was just released, and it's the first, I think, five Mata Hoople albums remastered with amazing full-body sounds and a ton of bonus tracks and some live stuff and some outtakes. And just it's an awesome box set. And, you know, in 2020, not that many bands put out box sets. And when they do, it's usually a budget thing, which is actually kind of cool. Like the Bow Wow Wow box set, the Yachts box set, they're all the Fabulous Poodles box set. The Lonely Ones. All those box sets are like $15 each. And it's like four CDs. And if it was 1995, those box sets would be like $85 because nobody buys them anymore. They just put them in cardboard instead of like a big box and like $15. That being said, Mata Hoople Mental Train is not one of those budget box sets. It is a deluxe box set with a beautiful book in it that has basically tells the story of the early band with some great stuff, some great pictures. And it's not your first stop if you're a Mata Hoople fan, but if you are a Mata Hoople fan and you've got the classics, you need this box set. It's one of the better boxes I've heard. And the best part is the remastered version of Brain Capers. And that album has got the full power. And I'm going to play a Brain Capers song at the end of the podcast tonight. The third thing that I'm going to mention, there's a relatively obscure band that maybe some listeners know called Chimp Eats Banana. And if you want to say it properly, I suppose it's Chimp Eats Banana. Adam and Tom and Adam, do you know the significance of Chimp Eats Banana?
I certainly do not.
Please stop pronouncing it that way.
Chimp Eats Banana. Well, I actually was doing Chimp Eats Banana, but I was talking to the main guy, and he kept saying banana. So I started saying banana, and I think he thought I was making fun of him. I just couldn't stop. You know what I mean? Like I just couldn't stop saying banana. Anyways, there is only one Chimp Eats Banana official release. And you're not going to get it because there's only 92 of them, and it was released in 1980. However, on Discogs, a lady was selling what I'm pretty sure is a bootleg compilation that includes three Chimp Eats Banana tracks and some other tracks. And on Discogs, and it's never been sold before on Discogs. And on the ad, she said, "My husband passed away. He had a record shop. Better that someone get these that appreciates them than they just sit away on some shelf and collect dust." And I probably bought the cassette within 30 seconds of it being listed. And I paid her, and she says, "I'm going to mail it on Monday." I said, "Oh, that's great." And I got the impression that the guy that owned the record store, I think he was kind of maybe like the UK Bleak or Bob, because if you looked at the collection, it was like all this like super obscure stuff. And so anyways, the next day, I see that the order's been canceled. And I'm like, oh, what a bummer. But you know, I mean, the lady's husband passed away. There might be any number of reasons why she doesn't want to send it to me. No problem. I understand. I'm bummed out, but, you know.
No excuse, John. You're still going to have to give her negative feedback.
Yeah, well, in its rare circumstance, I thought, nah, you know, who knows? I'm not even going to ask. You know, that's fine. She sent me an email. And she says, oh, I canceled the order. It wasn't what I thought it was. What it actually is just some cassette that says Chimp Eats Banana on it. And I'm like, you don't say. And I'm like, will you send that to me? She's like, if you want to pay me what you paid for the other thing, sure, I don't care. So I shot that money over mega quick. Within about 4 days, I get Chimp Eats, the Chimp Eats Banana. You could call an album, you could call a demo cassette in the mail. One of 92 made in 1980. And this is an amazing thing to have. I showed it to the guy that put it out in 1980, and it blew his mind. He thinks he has one in his parents' house in England. Adam and Tom and Adam, do you know who Chimp Eats Banana is?
Nope. We do not.
We don't.
Chimp Eats Banana is Chumbawamba before they were Chumbawamba. I've got the Chumbawamba demo tape, only one of 92 from 1980.
Well, you better relist that sucker for about $500.
I would not sell for $500. I don't know what I'd sell it for. I mean, there's a figure out there, but not for $500. I mean, you're not going to get another one of these. And so, I mean,
it can't be more than that punk news cassette that Swedish billionaire is trying to sell it. This guy's can it.
Yeah, but listen, that guy's got good taste. You know what I mean? Yeah. So anyway, the point being is, this is what record collecting is all about. If you keep your nose to the grindstone, you know, you can go out there and you can blow $3,000 on a Misfits 7-inch. But so what? I mean, so what? You know what I mean? This is what makes record collecting fun, getting super obscure, rare stuff like this. And if you keep your nose, you're not going to get everything you want, but if you keep your nose to the grindstone, you'll get some really cool stuff. And it makes the hobby a lot of fun. And this is a holy grail item for me. This is cool.
I love the sound effect of you clacking the tape around as you talk about this.
I love his pronunciation of banana.
Banana.
I'm not sure if I do. Tom, you got anything interesting?
You know, I've been on a bit of a binge lately, so I actually just grabbed like the six 7-inches that I have sitting on top of my stereo I've got them all within the last week. But what I've been doing a lot of hunting down of my favorite like 90s 7-inch records, because so much of that stuff wasn't on the LPs and they were so easy to get when I was a kid, but all the ones I didn't buy now it like haunts me. So I'm hunting them down in Discogs. And the other thing I've been hunting down relentlessly is this band from Detroit called Break Anchor that I'm a big fan of. And they have like a CD comp of all their early singles tracks, but I've been hunting down all the early singles. I have every single one now except for one. So my recently what I got was the Break Anchor All Eyes West split, which was, like I said, the second last Break Anchor thing that I didn't have. I have this Citizens Patrol Dead Children EP, which is Citizens Patrol were a really cool Dutch hardcore band. I have the Broke Downs Turkish Techno split 7-inch. I have North Lincoln's debut 7-inch, 3-song. North Lincoln was a Grand Rapids punk band that put out records on No Idea Records, like in the mid 2005 era. I have a record by a band called The Dead Metaphors, which was sent to me by a loyal listener. Thanks, John. Appreciate it. I'm enjoying it. And then I have a purple copy of the great Rhythm Collision mid-90s single Girl with the Purple Hair. Those are my latest purchases. And that's what I've been – I'm going to have to buy some more of those like cardboard boxes to put my 7-inches in, because I'm just having an issue. It's like a compulsion now. It's definitely my crack. So, yeah. Also, a couple cool things from our friends at Pirates Press, too. I got the Drowns album, which is great, like a classic style punk. And I got the new 12-inch Charger single called Watch Your Back, which is cool. That's it.
That's very cool. I prefer, I don't know, I find that picking up 7-inches makes me happier than other things.
It's the best format. It's the greatest format of music.
I feel like it is, because specifically because I you know, it is where you are going to find a lot of that weird shit that you won't just be able to stumble across, you know, either easily on an album or you know, boringly digital or however. I love like a regular
punk 7-inch that has like 4 songs on it. That was optimal. Mm. Or some of these hardcore bands where they had like 1-minute songs, you can get like easily 8 songs on a 7-inch.
That's my favorite thing.
It's like half an album, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like that a lot of those bands will come out and they'll put out like their proper release for the year. And you look at it listed online and it seems like, oh, it's 10 or 12 songs. And when you look at it from just like look at the Bandcamp page or something, and it looks like, oh, this is the band's next full length. And then you realize like, no, like this whole collection is like, it's like 9 minutes long.
Like 9 minutes. Yep. Well, my favorite 7-inch of all time, Adam, is the Negative Approach self-titled 10 song 7-inch. It's literally just under 10 minutes long. It's 10 songs. It's like the audio equivalent of someone slicing your skin off your face with a hatchet.
Nervous Breakdown 7-inch, baby. Nervous Breakdown on the A side. I love how it's one song on one side and three songs on the other.
No, that's great too, John. I don't disagree with that. My personal favorite is the Negative Approach one.
That's very cool.
Hey, sorry, Adam, we cut you off. Tell us about your Canadian stuff you got.
I can't because there's none of it. I literally have not bought a thing in this calendar year at the moment. So,
is that right?
Yeah, no, I haven't. And I, on the one hand, I'm really itching to get out, and there is some record show that is looming, and I keep thinking it's the weekend that is coming up, and it never is. But what I'm torn on now is that I just realized after like moving the brunt of my my cassette release that I put out of my life, that most of the money that had been going into that, or that people had paid for that, had just been going into the PayPal account, and I'd forgot that there would be a balance there afterwards.
Mm. So you got money burning a hole in your pocket.
Yeah, and now I do. Now I shouldn't, because if I should take that money and like, you know, use it to feed my children and not just assume it's free money on top of.
Spoken like a true loser. Forget that.
But yeah, no, I mean, no one knows it's there, right?
Your kids are fine.
So now that's good. That's good Discogs and money. So yeah. I feel like I need to make a plan now. Like I need a project, which is to say I need a, just like what you said, like I got to go chase a run of 7 inches from this or that band or complete a collection or something.
Or Mott the Hoople box set, Adam.
Or Mott the Hoople box set. Just
what happens with Discogs to me, and I don't know if we've talked about this before. I don't think so. But okay, I'm hunting down this one 7-inch, right? And they got it for $5.70. Cool. Shipping? Oh, $5 flat, no matter how much you order. Well, in that case, why don't I scour through all 3,000 of the things you have for sale? Because I'm sure I'm going to end up buying 5 7-inch, or I wanted 10, but I ended up buying 5, you know, just because you feel like you're getting your money's worth when it's flat shipping. And you just, in my last box had 5 7-inches in it. You know, it's good stuff. It's sort of like tricky, but you know, I enjoy it.
Trying to figure out what the charge for shipping was probably the stupidest part of my whole
project. Did you undercharge?
Well, like I,
from Canada to the US is pretty brutal.
Yeah,
it is, and it can be. And there's like, so there's a service that I signed up for that does like drop shipping, which is to say they'll take it in Canada and like drive it over the border and then ship it out in the States.
That's sweet.
Right. But I mean,
you could probably do that yourself, could you? Or is that like illegal?
I could, but I risk my own ass.
Adam gets pulled over. He's like by the side of the road with the American government, just like going through his trunk. It's full of cassettes. Arrest him! Arrest him! pointing their rifles at you.
I could go over the border to mail something. I feel a little bit weird if I had like 30 packed envelopes in my car and I, you know, it's hard for me to be like, what is all this for? And I'm like, just going to buy gas. And then I don't know. Like,
When you cross the border, do you tell them you're going to buy gas?
That used to be the line, but I haven't used it in a long time. I mean, I have a shipping place.
I would like train those guards, be like, screw you. You go back and pay $2.40 a liter, whatever you get ripped off for.
I mean, I have a shipping place, like a PO box in Niagara Falls, New York. So I'll go over and just say like, I'm going to pick up something from the shipping place. And they're like, okay. And they normally don't care. The Canadian side kind of cares based on what you picked up. from the U.S. shipping place, because if it falls into this or that category, you got to pay duty on it still. So, oh, yeah. You know, it depends if you want to lie to them or not.
I do want to lie.
It depends on.
I love to lie to anyone from the government. That's kind of my thing.
It depends on the dollar, to tell you the truth. So, like, it used to be when the dollar was a lot closer, we would go over, and there's a supermarket chain in I don't know if it extends any further than upstate New York called Tops. So we would go over the river and go to Tops. And actually, we used to, when my kid was first born, we used to go over there and go to Tops and buy milk, because your horrible monster creating hormone driven milk is so much cheaper than ours. So, and the kid was, when you have a kid, like, they're drinking that, like, homogenized, like, super milk, whatever it is, like, fattier than you're supposed to drink as an adult or whatever. So we'd go over and buy your big funny plastic jugs of milk from Tops and bring it back to the kid.
You know, but then when you're over there, I like how Adam takes a high and mighty stance in the Canadian versus USA battle until it comes time to actually spending money, which is, oh, the States is great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, on principle, I don't want your hormone driven super cows. But on the other hand, I'm way too cheap to care that much about it. But, you know, we go buy, you know, milk in a case of beer or whatever at one of the grocery stores and bring it back over. And generally, they don't really care. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, I have money burning. I should go do something with it.
I have gotten that. Well, like you were talking about, like, I have a band, that band Break Anchor, and I've just been buying all their. Now it's pretty doable. I think they have about 10 releases total.
Well, one of the things,
and that, I only have one. There's only one left that I don't have. So it, but you know, it's fun now. I have one left I have to get, and it's just sort of cool, and it does give you a sense of satisfaction. And there's another band called City Mouse that I've been doing the same thing. I have one release I don't have for them yet, and I, you know. I'm kind of hunting it down, want a certain color or whatever.
Along those lines, the concept of hunting stuff down, is there an objective number that's stupid to pay for a 7-inch? I was just going to – nervous breakdown, they're up to 1,500 bucks. And boy, do I wish
I bought a tenth of that is stupid.
Boy, do I wish I bought the $300 copy and Amoeba Records in 2007, which I'm like, that's ridiculous.
It's worse for me, John, because I remember when most of this stuff you could buy it for just retail.
I know. So the point being is there an objectively stupid number to pay for a record and is not in the sport of record collecting? Or if – I mean, like, I spent $34 – I mean, I spent $34 for Chimpy's Banana, and I was thrilled to pay $34 for Chimpy's Banana. Yeah. Is there a number that's objectively stupid to pay for a record or a CD or a cassette? Or can someone, I guess, not be acting stupid even if they pay, say – $1,500 for Nervous Breakdown and OG Press.
See, for me, I am a listener, not a collector. So everything I buy is for practical purposes. I don't care if I'm buying a new press of Nervous Breakdown straight from SST right now. I'd rather buy that for $8 than buy an OG copy that's all beat up for, you know, big money. So I for me, the numbers for like a CD or a 7-inch, it's probably like around $30. Mm. I mean, I won't go that high. I'm just, like I said, I listen, I have a lot of music, John. I have more music now than I'll ever listen to the rest of my life. So I'm actually trying to kind of be reasonable about it, but it's just so damn addictive. Record collecting is the worst.
It is, man. It's like heroin, man. And it really is. It's never enough.
You're exactly right, because I got 5 7-inches in the mail this week. That means I need to get 6 next week. And that's not even to feel good. That's just to get well.
That's be normal.
the thing that I find that pushes me down the path, although apparently not that far down the path because I haven't bought anything in a few months, but at least gets my brain going, is if you look at some of like the music related subreddits that are out there, or the punk rock subreddits or whatever, where people will go and just take a photo of, you know, like the floor of their bedroom where they've gone and they've just like, they've tiled out all of their whole collection of something. Like, they'll go and they'll be like, here's my 25 against me 7 inches. And they line them all up and then take a picture of it and throw it on the internet. Right. And you look at that. And on the one hand, you're like, who is that for? Like, I don't understand. Like, who's that content for? Who's really going to enjoy this weird picture you've taken of all this shit sitting on your dirty floor? But on the other hand, I look at that stuff and I'm like, good job.
Well, that's like what that's me with this break anger thing. Like, right, so there's only about 10 releases total, right? But I'm gonna get them, and I'm just like, as soon as I get the last one, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna take a picture of them and I'm gonna put it on the band's Facebook page. And I'm like, why am I gonna do that? I don't know. It's like a compulsive drive. It's like the Demogorgon is controlling me, Adam.
The worst culprit in that, though, is there's a subreddit called Cassette Culture that I like looking at, right, where people will go to like the thrift store and they'll just grab like whatever handful of, I don't know, fucking like Guns N' Roses tapes are just like sitting in the dirty pile, and they take a Jimmy picture Buffett. And they put it on there and they're like, starting my collection. And then like 300 people upvoted or something. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, why is this interesting? You just, this isn't something you sought or collected or is interesting or rare or cool or anything. It's just like
Guns N' Roses, Jimmy Buffett,
here's some
Pink
dirty
Floyd
mass market
Selena.
Shit that I found at the, okay. Thanks for contributing to the internet. We needed that.
I get mad when they're like, check out what I just got at the thrift store. It's like an original press of like Black Flags, My War, an original press of Dead Kennedys, and like an original press of like, you know, Crass's second album. I'm like, I'm finding Bing Crosby records. Like, how the hell are you finding these? I think half of that stuff is phony, and the people just kind of want like vindication or something or attention.
It is pretty.
You
know, my wife and I go to antique shops and stuff, but that's kind of like one of our things we like to do when we go on vacation or whatever. We like to go antiquing and stuff. And so she looks at whatever, I don't even know what the hell she looks at, but I look at records, you know, and I go through thousands and thousands of records to find one or two good ones.
But it's not even like Black Flag. It's like, oh, a billion.
No, it's like, wow, I found a copy of Billion Dollar Babies that still has the original bill in the money clip that has right. Alice Cooper's face on it, you know? Or something like that. But it's mostly 90% of like thrift store stuff is like crooner era.
Right.
Or classical. Those classical people, boy, they gave their collections right to Goodwill as soon as
I don't know if it's a question of them giving their record collection to Goodwill.
You think it was the kids, right? Yeah.
All right.
Well,
so
listen,
we've had this
conversation, John, about I'm just like, I fear what happens to my records after I'm gone, but luckily I have a good friend that, you know, my wife would call to take care of that as long as he's still around. But other than that, my shit might get thrown away, man. I don't know.
So this friend's gonna show up with like a big bucket of lye and like dump your corpse into there and then just like throw the records on top. Exactly. And just roll it out.
I have two problems. Yes.
It's really the same problem. All right. So anyone want to play something before we move on?
Adam, play
John, something. You wanted to go last, John?
John, go last. I'll play something. So, all right. So there's a band from Vancouver called Spectres. They were basically completely off my radar, although they somehow over the past, over the past decade released three or four different full lengths, and I never heard any of them. The last of which, though, I should have paid attention to because it was out on Deranged, and I like Deranged and the stuff that they put out. So this new record that they have coming out this year is called Nostalgia. It is a fittingly ironic name for this kind of band because they have just this huge like 80s new wave, kind of like dark college rocky sound that they're doing. Something that feels like it would have been much more trendy and in vogue like 4 or 5 years ago. But the fact that these guys were doing it sort of before that became a trend and now are doing it, I think, after it's become a bit of an indie rock trend is maybe kind of testament to the fact that this is the shit that they're into. They're an interestingly build band for me because even though they play this this new wave inspired sound that I keep seeing people refer to, at least like West Coast people refer to, as like cold punk or dark punk or, you know, or death rock or anything like that. And I'm like, I mean, like death rock I hear, but I'm like, I haven't heard any of these other genres out in the wild for bands that aren't from Vancouver. So I don't know if it's a, if it's like a Pacific Northwest kind of thing or whatever, but in any case, these guys, they never shy away from like throwing punk into the label of what they do. And even their whole bio these days talks about how they're all, you know, products of the DIY punk underground and played in all these punk bands. And even though they're playing this like super smooth, like really polished new wave sound, they're all just still a bunch of punk guys. And it's weird to me to hear that be the branding. Whereas so often like bands were that maybe could cut it in the indie rock world, even if they are kind of punk guys, always try to like hide that fact. Like it's an embarrassment, but these guys don't. And I find that very interesting. So anyways, the record is called Nostalgia. The band is Spectres. The song I'm going to play is called The Head and the Heart. The Head and the Heart. And it's out on Artifact Records on March 13th. So here you go. This is Spectres. I think it's cool. Okay, we're back. We got some stuff to talk about. Some stuff we probably have lots to say about, and some stuff we are going to curiously tilt our head at. On that note, My Chemical Romance is back. They've announced a run of North American tour dates.
Yes.
They announced this with a 13-minute dramatic video that I have not watched because it's 13 minutes long. And I just don't care about
it. And it's My Chemical Romance.
So this is a band that was Positively huge in the in the I guess the tail end of the mall emo era. Is that being dismissive?
No, I was going to say they were like the hot topic band.
Yeah, like they were definitely like they fit all the stereotypes, right? They're gonna wear all black and have swoopy black hair and wear eyeliner and stuff like that. Oh, you know, they were what was the year? 2000. Okay, so their big record was the Black Parade, and that came out in 2006, right? So just to kind of, I guess, place them there. I for some reason think that they're in my head as a band that is like a couple years removed from the earlier, what is it, like Victory and Vagrant Records, you know, Thursday, Thrice, what's that other fucking band? Whatever. If you listen to those bands, but anyways, but so now if you were to ask me, I'm a 37-year-old man in the year 2020. Do people care about My Chemical Romance? I would have made a bunch of dismissive comments like I just made, and then assumed that, yeah, I guess the people that were fans of them might still care, but I imagine a lot of people have grown
up. By people, you don't mean John and I.
I don't mean John and you. I certainly don't mean our dear friend Liverpool Neil, although I know he is into this band. I would assume that I don't know, they have some sort of like nostalgic fan base, but I would be wrong. I would be the wrong betting man for that, because people went ape shit about this. They went mad. They were buying tickets like before the tickets were. They were crashing Ticketmaster and raging on the internet.
They didn't do any pre-sales. You know, typically now when it's a big show, you'd be like, well, if you've got a certain MasterCard, you can buy them on Wednesday. And if you belong to the Mile High Club, you can buy them on Thursday. You know, but they didn't do that. They rolled them all out on Friday. John will be thrilled to know that Ticketmaster did his favorite thing, where they used their floating ticket prices. And when they started to sell very, very fast, they started jacking up their own ticket prices to where a $70 ticket, by the time they were done with fees, was going for $170.
Some tickets were going for $800.
Scalping their own tickets.
Do you guys know how long it took this tour to sell out?
Like the 6 hours.
How'd you know that? It was precisely 6 hours.
I read it somewhere. Because I was still, you know why, John? Because I was still online trying to get my ticket. I was in the queue. My daughter, who is 18, so she would have been, she's a little young, honestly, to be their core audience, is big into this band. I know she wanted to go, so I don't know if we'll end up trying to go to Riot Fest to see them or what, because we were unable to get tickets for the Detroit show. So Liverpool, Adam was mocking Liverpool Neil for being a My Chemical Romance fan, which he is, and I don't mind you mocking him for it, but he has a daughter about that same age. I know she likes him too, so I don't know, maybe we'll do some kind of a cross-generational thing where we'll go stand in a field with 50,000 people and watch My Chemical Romance.
I mean, honestly, when this band was getting big,
you were old enough to know better.
I was confidently enough on my own road that I don't feel like I begrudged them.
Was that road less than Jake, Adam?
No, that was years earlier, right? This band was... Okay, so when Black Parade came out, it would have been the year after I graduated from university. So like I was firmly in my, I was on the track that I'm on right now. Where like honestly, what was I listening to at that point? Like I was listening to like I was like backfeeding on like the Discord catalog or something at that point. I was listening to a lot of Fugazi then that year, right? Like I was way down my own particular rabbit hole, and I was out of high school. I was out of like the mall scene. I was, you know, it just wasn't there for me. Like I had no reason to encounter it.
Yeah,
and I live in an area of the world.
I barely even know who they are.
Yeah, like I live in an area of the world where there are not, or there were not, Hot Topics. So it's not even like
you didn't drive across the border just to go to Hot Topics.
No, right? But it was also like, you know, these were not my prime hanging out in shopping mall years either. So it's not like I was like shaking my fist at these emo kids, right? Like I have far more beefs with like the immediate post Blink-182 crowd of popular bands than I do a lot of this stuff. I just don't like it. Like, but I don't like it in a very I'd like to feel like a very live and let live kind of way. So hey, if you want to pay $900 to go see My Chemical Romance play in a hockey arena, by all means, you can go do that.
I think the thing with My Chemical Romance is, from what little bit I've heard, which my daughter has their albums, you know, on vinyl, it's definitely got an artsy fartsy element to it. It's not like the retardo rock of like Blink-182. You know, it's got sort of like a Queenish quality. Yeah,
there's
to
a theatricality,
a pretentious epicness that I despise.
I
thought that was a compliment, but it was something you despise.
I do not despise artsy fartsy, and I like epicness and I like theatricality. However, what astounds me is that My Chemical Romance, their theatricality is, oh, we watched A Nightmare Before Christmas 3 times in a row. That this is what we do, they are the Hot Topic band. And
but, you know, if we're being honest, John, did Gerald Way, is that the singer?
That's his name. Yeah.
He has had great success writing comics and other things. So he might not be as, you want to maybe paint, you're trying to paint him as more shallow than he is. Maybe.
I think his comics are just My Chemical Romance, the comic, basically. I know he's got, I think, all the,
have you read them? I have.
I think people like giving him praise, but I think it's all pretty, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But I've never read the comic. I shouldn't say that. I don't know. I am suspicious.
You've never listened to his music. You've never read his comics, yet you think he sucks. Just say it, John.
Well, I've heard My Chemical. Actually, I don't know if I have, to tell you the truth. The point, I know they suck just because their album covers, honestly. Anyway, the point being is the point being is that the weird thing for me is that people who I would consider respectable music critics and even overly pretentious music critics are like, yay, My Chemical Romance is back. The editor of Pitchfork was like, yay, My Chemical Romance is back. I'm like, Pitchfork. Well,
Todd, what about 50 something crotchety first wave British punk guys?
I hear you. I mean, I am astounded that the question I have, and I don't think any of us can answer this, is when did this band go from being a joke to being considered a legit good band, or is it a falsity and that truly the power of marketing and advertisement is stronger than it's ever been, and because there's a monopoly on big shows, that literally pure marketing turned this band from a joke into a band that everyone wanted to pay to go see? I don't know. It's just a guess.
There's an old cliche, John, and the old cliche is that absence makes the heart grow fonder. And the truth of the matter is 90% of the time that cliche is not true. If a band goes away for 10 years, only the most devoted generally will give a shit when they come back. But for whatever reason, when it comes to My Chemical Romance, absence truly did make the heart grow fonder. This band's only been broken up for like 8 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's not like it's 30 years after the original, you know, it's so, I don't know. They speak to people in a profound way, and I don't really want to challenge that, because there's things that speak to me in a profound way that other people think suck. And I think My Chemical Romance sucks. But yeah, you know,
you're
what?
Right. They're wrong.
No, that's just not true, John. It's just it's an aesthetic choice, you know.
That's a joke, Tom. That's a joke.
I know. I mean, you know, listen, John, we can argue all day about, you know, xylophone and punk, but ultimately it touches you more than other people, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Those like people certain, are wrong. I'll go on record. I know,
but it's just certain bands respond, you know, resonate with certain people more. Or, you know, the fact of the matter is I'm almost 10 years older than you guys. So, you know, what resonates with me doesn't necessarily resonate with you. And I think My Chemical Romance with people who are about 30 right now really resonates, or even younger.
What if somebody said Vanilla Ice resonates with me? Ice Ice Baby really moves me.
John, so Ice Ice Baby came out when I was in high school, right? Junior year, I think. I'm not positive. I I can't remember what year it was exactly, but I had a girlfriend who was so into it, I had to dump her. I just could not be with someone who thought Vanilla Ice was good.
I love that all Tom's points keep going in an area that I just don't think they're going. This is wonderful for me. I'm infinitely fascinated by
it. I got to tell you, man, I could not date chicks who were into like the boy band stuff or like the white rap. I couldn't do it. So anyway.
So speaking of boy bands and white rap, Dead Milkmen are
great seg, Adam. Great seg.
So, okay. So they last Saturday, they posted a video where they were chatting about their favorite film soundtracks, but at the start of the video they slyly mentioned that they were working on and possibly even recording a new album. Signor Roddy Anonymous said, "Each week while working on their new album, members of the Dead Milkmen ask each other a question ... and then they get into the conversation that they're having. So clearly they're working on a new album. There you go. So the band's last LP was Pretty Music for Pretty People, which came out in 2014. And then an EP called Welcome to the End of the World came out in 2017. John, what's your read on the Dead Milkmen?
There's not a whole lot to take here. There's two things I want to mention. First, Pretty Music for Pretty People was a very good record.
It was
a little bit overly long, as you could make the argument a lot of Dead Milkmen records are. The funny thing is I actually just picked up a vinyl copy of Pretty Music for Pretty People. It's called Pretty Music for Pretty Special People, and it's only 9 tracks, and it is slamming front to back. So, I mean, sometimes – the CD and vinyl format, it makes a difference just because there's the break or there's a fewer songs. It's a great record. And as completely, I think the Dead Milkmen really are you know, back into it. They had some, you know, okay records in the late 90s and early 2000s. Stony, King in Yellow, the comeback record. Those are okay records, not great.
They faded after. Let me see. I'm on Discogs right now.
Well, the first four records are pretty slammed, and the fifth one.
Okay, so Big Lizard in My Backyard is great. Eat Your Paisley is great. Bucky Fellini is great. Beelzebub is great. And then they kind of. Metaphysical Graffiti's okay. Soul Rotation, eh. Not Richard, but Dick, eh.
Here's the thing, Tom.
Okay, so then it was 16 years between Stony and The King in Yellow. The King in Yellow is a good album.
Eh, a little boring if you ask me.
It's a little sad, but... Pretty Music on CD. It's got 17 songs on it.
Right, the vinyl version only has 9, and I think it's way better just because it's so kicking. Anyways,
but then you lose Sanitary Times and Hipster Beard.
I think it's worth the cut. Anyways, what I'm saying is one of the interesting things is, well, Medical Physical Graffiti is not a bulletproof record, but it's got some of the very best songs on Methodist Coloring Book. You could argue it's best.
Yeah, that's a good song.
Second thing, I got totally
but very somber, so somber, John.
Well, that's what weighs it down. The hot tracks are the good ones, if you ask me. I have to disagree with not Richard, but Dick. I actually just got that record for the first time like 6 months ago. That it's only like 20 minutes long. That record is one of their best. I mean, that
really
re-listen to that record. It's actually mostly Joe Jack singing, which is surprising, but it is a great record. I mean, it is
really great. I don't recognize any of the tracks on there.
I'll tell you, re-listen to that. But the thing,
I like that.
The other thing that I wanted to point out, and this really surprised me, you can't really go by Facebook responses anymore because the Facebook algorithm is so wacky; it makes no sense. And we used to get, say, 10,000 to 30,000 views on an article from Facebook. Sometimes we get like 200, even though we've got 70,000 or 80,000 fans on Facebook. It doesn't make any sense. And also, our automatic Facebook uploader is broken right now, so we don't automatically post. But Adam, check this out.
Everything kind of gets dumped like at one time a day, right?
Right. But check this. Our Dead Milkmen news was our biggest article of the past like 2 years. Like, it was insanely huge. Really? And I don't know if that's just because people are super hungry for Dead Milkmen. Like, you don't really hear people talking about Dead Milkmen a whole lot, you know, outside of Philadelphia. But like it blew up huge on Facebook, and I don't know if that's because people are hot for the Dead Milkmen or we just hit the algorithm at the right time. I don't know.
Huh.
So I love the Dead Milkmen. One of my favorites, and I have never seen them.
Awesome live.
And I would love, they're like probably top five bucket list for me. I got to see them. But I love those early albums. When I was in middle school, my friend gave me Big Lizard in My Backyard, and I've pretty much been hooked on it ever since. So anyway, cool. I would look forward to hearing the new record. I really think the last two have been great.
All right. So, okay, I guess we'll do this one. I'm actually, you know what? I'll start this one, and then I'll go for a long walk and think about my life for a while. And
I don't have a whole lot. I only have one thing to say on this, but
really,
yeah. I'm not looking at the doc.
Can I set a fucking timer, and we'll find out how long you?
Yes,
we both.
Yeah, maybe it won't be as long as that last Canadian band you talked about, Adam.
Maybe. All right. Yes. The whole country of Canada versus how much you two can speak about Danzig. So, yes, Danzig is he is going to headline Psycho Las Vegas 2020, which is, what is this? A music festival? Is it
Psycho Las Vegas is the heavy metal punk rock bowling, essentially.
Okay. So for the show, his band is going to play all of Danzig 2, Lucifuge. Other bands playing the festival include The Flaming Lips, Blue Oyster Cult, Ty Siegel, Obituary, Emperor, Mayhem, Boris, TSOL, Wino, and others. This whole thing goes down from August 14th through 16th in the Sin City there. So Danzig is... okay, here we go.
This is a huge story. This is a huge, huge story. Except for the fact that they're probably only going to do a few one-off shows. I would be so excited to see them play that album, but I must put an asterisk by it. As much as I like the guitar playing of Tommy Victor, he doesn't really pull off the John Christ parts as well as John Christ because he doesn't have that bluesy touch. And
he doesn't have a swing. He doesn't have
a swing. Sounds a little too ch-ch-ch-y. But anyway, I would love to see them play. I mean, that is by far their best album, and I would love to see them play it all the way through. Cause it's a long way back from hell, right, John?
First of all, I am happy that Blue Oyster Cult is headlining festivals because for the past 30 years they've been doing county fairs. And honestly, yeah. and not to put too much praise on a promoter, even though I am a promoter in the most limited sense, is the reason for this is because the guy that does the Baltimore Heavy Metal Fest, what's that called? I've been doing a bunch of times. Whatever the Baltimore Heavy Metal Fest, Maryland Death Fest,
he
decided to reposition Blue Oyster Cult not as the County Fair act, but as one of the few first wave heavy metal acts, and he had them headline the festival one year, and it was a huge deal. And so since then, Blue Oyster Cult has been headlining festivals around the world. So good for them. I'm happy for them. That's good. The issue with Danzig is, listen, Danzig's the man, and people say Danzig only wants the money. If he only wants the money, then why is he doing Danzig? Because I guarantee you, even though I'm sure that the Misfits have raised the value of Danzig, I'm sure Danzig does not get the money that Misfits get, you know. So you got to give him credit for that. But here's the thing, Tom and Adam, Lucifuge 2, Danzig 2, is without question the most singing of the Danzig albums. He sings the most on that album. Does he still have the voice to do it? Oh, so
you're fearful he can't pull it off anymore.
Well, listen, I mean, Danzig's the man, and no matter what he does going forward, he will always be Danzig. You know, however many awesome Misfits albums, four amazing Sam Hain albums.
However many softcore porn movies he makes, he will always be Danzig.
He will always be Danzig, but the past time I've seen him, it took his voice about three songs to warm up, and then he was Danzig again.
I hope he doesn't start with Long Way Back from Hell. Then I hope he starts out with a couple of his crappy newer songs.
I think he might start off with Skin Carver, and I think he does that on purpose because he just yells at that song, and I think maybe that warms up his voice.
Nobody cares about that song.
Well, he loves that song.
I know it's very popular among his crazed fans. Oh, John, you know we were talking about earlier. Adam was talking about these record collectors that just lay out all their records. I mean, we've seen people on the Seventh House group who literally have like 40 pressings of Walk Among Us. Like every color from every country and every variant, Adam. It's insane. like thousands of dollars worth of freaking copies of Walk Among Us.
Same record. Yeah, same record. Anyways, the point being is, I you know, maybe he didn't do that many shows this year. Maybe, and when I saw him with the Misfits, he was sounding good. I'm hoping his voice comes back or comes back at least as best it can, because, you know, Lucifuge is the most difficult dance album to sing. I know this as a famous singer that is known for crooning, and I just hope he can do it. And I'm not placing a hex on him. You know, I just don't want it to backfire.
I would love to hear. I would love to hear that whole album, Under Her Black Wings and Blood and Tears and Devil's Plaything. Oh, I'm in ecstasy over here just thinking about it.
That wasn't too bad, guys.
What about you, Adam? Do you feel the same way? Are you in ecstasy? Do you have a boner right now?
I mean, only about this next story that we're going to talk to. That was 3 minutes and 58 seconds, by the way, of dancing talk. So I take it back. That was not as long as I thought.
Yeah, we talk about dancing longer than that just on a random episode where there's no dancing stories.
I know. It's like there's actual news and you guys are like, eh, whatever.
It's become kind of a running joke, Adam.
All right, so
it's kind of our thing.
So this next story is a weird one for me because it prompted me to do things that I don't do.
Heroin?
Well, maybe. I mean,
sing Danzig songs.
We'll have to see. So Dirt Nap Records was one of my favorite labels, especially back in the in I think like the
when the other a-holes were getting into My Chemical Romance. Adam was listening to Dirt.
And you know what though? But like, I feel that like it is the golden age of punk news for me. Like the golden age of my interaction with the punk news community was when I was really getting into Dirt Nap. And I started really getting into Dirt Nap if only because like, I forget what was the initial, the exact initial thing, but someone in the comment sections on a review or a story that I had written or something like that gave me shit about not being like down with all of this Dirt Nap stuff because I must have been writing about some band that was like kind of adjacent, and so someone just like showed up and reamed me out about that I got to get down with Dirt Nap and I got to check all this stuff out. I got to go find, because this was back when this was definitely back when, so like the Briefs were a Dirt Nap band before they signed to BYO. So early 2000s, say, right? And I went and I dove like head first into the Dirt Nap catalog. So Dirt Nap is a label out of Portland, or have they moved?
I thought I read that they had moved like four times.
Yeah, like
are they in Wisconsin now?
Yeah, actually, we'll say they are in Wisconsin now. So they used to be in Portland or Seattle, somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. And when they were there, they had a record store called Green Noise that they were associated with that is probably still there. Let's find out where Green Noise Records, where was that? Green Noise was in Portland, right? So they're not in Portland anymore. And they are now out in Madison, Wisconsin. So they've gone and they've announced a 20-year anniversary mini festival kind of thing. Two nights of shows at a venue called the High Noon Saloon that is in Madison. So night one of this event, it's got Martha from the UK, who's a fantastic pop punk band. I saw them play at the Ottawa Explosion a few years ago, and they're really good. Radioactivity is playing it, which is one of the Markmen offshoots. Bad Sports, Mean Jeans, the River City Tan Lines, that was the band that was associated for a while with In the Red Records as well. Legendary Wings and Fox Face, that's the first night. The second night on this, the Saturday night, the Marked Men playing one of their fairly rare performances these days. What I believe is a reunion of the Epoxies. So the Epoxies are one of these bands that was a Dirt Nap band originally and then turned around and signed to Fat for a record or two, but they're not really active anymore. White Wires, which is a very cool Ottawa-based band that plays in that like Marked Men garage punk vein that is not together anymore because one of the three members lives in LA these days, but they're getting back together for that. the Hussy personality cult, Mind Spiders, Dracula's, the Steve Ademic Band, again, another cool Ottawa band. Good Shade, Low Culture, Lost Balloons, which is another Marked Men offshoot. Sugar Stems and Proud Parents. So they went and they announced this festival. It's two nights. It's in Madison. 2-day passes for this sucker, $50. And I bought one.
Did you only buy one?
I bought a pass. I thought, you know what?
Because it's sold out, it looks like. The 2-day passes are sold out.
In like a day, right?
It sold out like a My Chemical Romance show.
Yeah. So I thought to myself, you know what? I'm gonna buy a ticket to this. Because if for no other reason than like this is one of these shows that I would look at from afar and just like really be sad that I couldn't be there. And this it's very rare that I get like that for stuff. Like I'll see lineups of big things like big riot fests and stuff like that where there's technically a bunch of bands that I quote unquote like that are playing it. But the fact that I'm not there does not bother me at all. This I saw the lineup of and I was like, oh, I'm like
this not, was not, just your wheelhouse.
It's my
this
wheelhouse, but like not only that, but like it's my wheelhouse, but with the people that would appreciate it the most. Like you get a bunch of Dirt Nap people in a venue to see the Marked Men play a headlining thing, and like it's in that room is like. And like outside of, I guess, like some diehards that are like Denton that are like hometown people, like there is not going to be a more appreciative room for that band anywhere. So I saw this thing and I'm like, I'm going to buy one of these tickets. Now, I bought it with the concept of I've never been a, you know, aftermarket sell a ticket guy. But I figure if worst comes true and I can't actually go to Madison, Wisconsin, then I suppose I could just sell the ticket. It's not the end of the world that I went and I bought this thing. But I think I'm going to this. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I researched this, Tom. It is a 10.5 to 11 hour drive from where I am. Yeah,
I would say it's 5.5 for me.
Now,
and Neil and I were actually talking about it, like maybe we should go over there and we could all hang out, but it sold out so fast. You know, we're old. We have like lives to work around. And by the time we were starting to put it together, it was too late.
Yeah. Like, so is that a thing? If you were going from Grand Rapids, would you take one of those crazy ferries over Lake Michigan to
get? No, like, I would drive.
You would drive down below. See,
here's the thing, Adam, I'm a Midwesterner, right? So we drive everywhere. Like, you know, if I were going to go out and go to one of John's crazy shows in Philadelphia, I'm driving. I could, but you know,
Adam did drive down and he ran the blockade, mind you.
He did, but from him to you is not that far.
It was still a good 7 hours in a car, right? But that's good to drive. But 10. But
I mean, and Adam left at like 6 a.m. the next morning.
But you know, Adam, like we vacation in like South Carolina, and we drive 18 hours. A lot of people like for spring break will go to Florida. It's 24 hours. You know, we just that's what we do.
I
had four kids. I couldn't afford to fly places. You know, you can't afford to buy six air. You know, so we drive on vacation.
So my thoughts on this are, I think. If I fly out of Buffalo and I buy the tickets at the right time and I'm not too choosy about it, I'm going to pay pretty much the equivalent of gas prices for the flight out of Buffalo.
Well, and where you're going to fly to Madison? You're going to fly to Milwaukee?
You can fly out of Buffalo, change in Chicago, and then fly into Madison. And
you realize once you get to Chicago, you're literally like a, you know, less than 3 hour drive from, you know, like a 3 hour drive from Madison.
Sure. Tops. But then I got to get the, I still got to get that.
You
got to
get a car. Yeah.
Right. So, but I think
that's where we would meet up if we were going probably then you could fly into Chicago. We could pick you up, but alas. It's not happening. So unless you can work your punk news magic and get us some passes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to see. But in any case, so I think I'm going to this.
Me, you, and Neil in a Super 8 room, you know, we got to flip to see who shares beds.
Hey, whatever.
I love leaving you speechless, Adam. It's the thing I live for.
I am speechless. This is happening. I'm going to go there somehow. I'm not sure. I might.
That's awesome. I've been known to do that, dude, because yeah, once you buy the tickets, like, okay, that's it. Now I'm going. I'm surprised you didn't buy a pair of them just because, okay, you could take your wife or you could, at least you could take someone with you. Buying only one and then having it sell out does make it a little awkward, doesn't it?
No, because I go to shows alone most of the time.
No, I do too, Adam, but I don't go to shows 7 hours from my house or, you know what I mean? Because here's what I
was thinking about this. If it was to be a whole, like, if we were to make a whole vacation out of it, then of course it would be a me and my wife kind of thing.
Sure.
But in this case,
then you got to stay at a decent hotel, and there's a few other things that had to happen.
Right, we'd have to get the kids. We'd have to get the kids looked after, and that's a, like,
find other stuff to do. You'd have to, like, make some concessions. I think I know how marriage works, Adam.
Yeah, well, but also, like, we definitely, there's places we're going to want to go this year where we're going to want someone to watch our kids, and I don't want to burn.
Not Wisconsin.
I don't want to burn the kid watching credits on Madison, right?
I was there at one point. I hear that.
But also, I don't want to necessarily subject my wife to, like, hey, we're gonna drive for 10 hours, and then I'm gonna make you go to the High Noon Saloon from 3 p.m. until 3 a.m. to watch 12 bands play
that you don't give a crap about.
That seemed maybe not what I wanted to be like. Like, here's your vacation that I'm subjecting you to. So anyways,
So
if you are a Punk Dudes podcast listener and you're in the Wisconsin area and you want to tell me where to get a hamburger, this is your chance, I guess. So yeah.
Well, listen, I'm going to be out of town in April, and I'm going to go, I think I'm going to go see Subhuman. So I might make this same plea. I'm like, hey, anybody in St. Louis want to meet up and go to a show? So we'll see what happens. Win a date with Adam White. This will be a promotion, and you unfortunately have to provide your own ticket and transportation. And if you give him a ride back to his hotel, that'd be great.
And you have to pay for the date.
Exactly. Boy, we have a ton of, the prize wheel is really stocked with stuff here at Punk News, right?
Yeah, we got all sorts of stuff to give away. Tapes?
I could give you like 50 flexies. I have a shit ton of them.
All right, so we are X minutes into this show. Does anyone else want to play a song at this point, or what are we doing?
I don't care. I can play a song.
Play a song.
Play a song, Tom.
All right. So I was just talking about this single I bought. It was this kind of lost band from the 90s called Rhythm Collision, and they had some really, really cool songs, but their albums, you know, like, they couldn't put it together to have, like, a full 12-song great album. So they're actually a really good singles band. So I know this song is pretty easy to find. So let's play the great, great Rhythm Collision song, Happy as a Clam, from their 1995-ish album, Clobberer. Clobberer. Easy for me to say. So anyway, Rhythm Collision, Happy as a Clam.
Yeah.
All right, we're back. Let's bank some quick stories here to wrap this sucker up. John, what do you want to tell us about Bauhaus?
Oh, we probably should have had a pre-podcast meeting. But Bauhaus has got some shows coming up. I'm excited to go. I guess the question is the Bauhaus reunion going to continue? I don't have tickets to anything yet. The New York tickets shot way up in price, but now they're dropping down. Bauhaus is cool. I love Bauhaus. I will probably go to one of the Bauhaus shows. I'll say Bauhaus again. And other than that, it looks cool.
So the Chicago tickets were running about 80 before fees. So you're talking about $100 a ticket. Is that what Philly was going?
No, there is no. There's only New York. And if they were in Philly, I'd pay $100 like that to say Bauhaus. I mean, I hate paying $100 for tickets these days. But if it's Bauhaus, I'm paying it. But it's in New York, so I got to ride the train up. I got to get a hotel. The whole thing.
Well, and the thing is, it depends on the venue too. $100, you know, not all things are equal. So $100 in a relatively intimate venue is a whole lot better than, you know, the Misfits show for $100 at a hockey.
Yeah. So anyways, I agree. Bauhaus, they're cool. I hope to see them, but if I don't, not the end of the world, but I would like to see them.
The shows, if you want to look it up on Punk News, anybody, are in June. So that's when you're looking. So, what else we got to talk about here? John, your buddies, Vixen 77, are they your buddies?
No, I mean, they're not my, they're a band that I think is pretty cool. It's mostly young women. Actually, it's all you young women in the band. This was another surprise to me. Vixen 77 is a Philadelphia band, and they're basically like the Stooges meet the Dead Boys meets the Runaways. And they're a cool band, and they're a fun band. They're a very young band. I think they've got some good songs. Actually, all their songs are good. I think some of the songs could be made a little bit better, and that some the lyrics probably could be – they're a good band. But they've got room for improvement like any band does. But they're a good band. I mean, they're cool. The what surprised me about – we debuted, they were like, will you debut our music video at Punk News? I'm like, sure, you know. Because some people still think that, like, debuting a video anywhere – like, honestly, even debuting a video at, like, Rolling Stone or Vice or wherever or Entertainment Weekly, like, no one cares anymore, you know. This video is up to, like, 7,000 views. Do you know what Tom, do you know what the average punk video gets – like that people might have heard and might not have. Do you know how many views they get?
3,000.
They're lucky they get 300.
Yeah.
Right.
Really?
Bomb the music industry. I mean, I'm sorry, Jeff Rosenstock, who is relatively big, he gets 3,000 to 6,000. This video got 7,000 views. You know, and I'll just be frank. I mean, a part of that might be because the young women are very, very attractive. But
creeping on them.
So people are creeping on them, but they're not really presenting themselves in that way.
If I would have known I could creep on them, I might have watched it, John.
So, I mean, they're a very good band. I was just surprised they got 7,000 views, you know.
That is a lot. And there is nothing to me that is more of like a cold water in the face reality check about what kind of reach anyone actually has anymore. Yeah. Is if we go premiere something and then I go look at the views on it like a week later and it's like, you know, 200 people have watched this video and you're like, oh
yeah,
that's too bad.
Yeah, and like sometimes
it is funny though, because yeah, you go on YouTube and you watch a video and you'd be like, oh my gosh, the great, you know, old classic punk song. Yeah, and there'll be like 300 views, but then another one, you might go look at another one, there might be 1.5 million. You just don't know.
There's a little bit of you know, secret internet sauce that I think comes into what makes something succeed or not, and that has maybe little to do with the music and a lot more to do with a bunch of marketing bullshit. But
here's a question.
I think they have like people in India just watching it over and over. They're paying people to watch their videos.
You never know. Weirder things have happened.
I like this video. I like the song. I thought the video was very funny. Adam, did you watch the video?
I watched some of the video as I was putting together the show.
Was the video funny and cool, or did I just think the video was funny and cool because I know them and I think they're nice people?
It was fine. It was not. It would not have grabbed my attention otherwise. It's not doing something so like wacky and innovative that I would, you know, like pull someone off the street and be like, you gotta watch this, it's insane, or anything like that.
So you always gotta watch out for like nice guy band syndrome. You know what I mean? As a reviewer or whatever, you know. Or is that even a problem? I think Adam White might think that's not a problem.
But hey, I've been trying to float on my controversial theories that everything is equally good and nothing matters. So in that respect, yeah, like because actually, and I had that thought a little bit when I was listening to these guys earlier, because there's a handful of bands that I feel that have a similar sound that are contemporaneous to this band that I was more familiar with. And the only reason I was more familiar with them is that they're from like Montreal or something. So like when I look at it that way, like it very much fits my theory where I'm like, you know, there's a lot of bands that sound like this and it's a good sound and they're all pretty good. Right. And it takes a little bit of the magic out of the equation, but it's like, you know, if you can throw a tennis ball and hit a band that has a cool sound like this, then you should enjoy that band.
Well, anyway, I dig Vixen 77. I think they're cool. They're a new band. I think they've got, you know, some growing to do, but I think they're off to a great start, and I'll be excited to see what they do next.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, so here's a show we can't go to, but might be kind of interesting. So, John, we talked for a while on this podcast back in the lead up to Dose Your Dreams, the last Fucked Up LP.
Yes.
About the all the various secret projects and other bands and various insanity that Fucked Up puts into their release schedules. They're constantly creating sub bands and releasing things that may or may not be related and kind of leaving breadcrumbs on the internet for people to find and doing all kinds of fun stuff like that. And one of the bands was called Jade Hairpins. They had a single they released back in 2018, and that I think it was on Merge, right? Was it on Merge?
Indeed it was, yeah. My friends.
And basically said nothing since then. And it was clear at the time that Jade Hairpins was a Fucked Up related band for a whole bunch of reasons. The B side of the High Rise 7-inch was credited to them. So
yeah, it was a Jade Hairpins quote cover.
Yeah, it was a cover of a Jade Hairpin song. There were lyrics in the Dose Your Dreams song Accelerate, where they say something about that her hair was pinned by Jade or something like that. So in any case, it was clear that there was a connection, and they are part of that sea of supplementary Fucked Up material that was coming out, but there wasn't really much of it. And it's totally possible that nothing would come of it because they make these bands up from time to time without much of an intention to do anything with them. But this time they're actually doing some stuff. So Jade Hairpins has been, I guess, revealed officially to be the brainchild of Fucked Up drummer Jonah Falco and guitarist Mike Halchuk. And they are they're going to go on tour. They have seven performances that are scheduled in the UK. Their live band features two other members that they've added in, and they are apparently going to release more music and play more shows. The this is officially like a going concern. It's a thing. So Jade Hairpins are going to go out and play some stuff. Now this is a band that is. I mean, you talked about the song that I played earlier in the show where I said it was pretty new wave. This is super new wave. Intensely so. And the one thing that came out of this that I thought was the most amusing was back when Dose Your Dreams came out, we talked a lot about whether there was whether there was a rift between vocalist Damien Abraham and the rest of the band, if for no other reason
than Havlicek especially.
Havlicek especially. If not, I mean, this is a band where they've always had, you know, like big personalities clashing with each other. You know, everyone in the band trying to make their own high art, and that not always kind of equaling what everyone else is trying to make. But also the fact that Damien's role in this record was decidedly different than the other ones, and that he wasn't necessarily the primary vocalist. They had a whole bunch of guest vocalists on there as well. So there was a lot of things that this or that person would have uttered to the press or on the internet or whatever, where we were reading into it a lot about, like, you know, is this the end? Are they mad at each other again? Is it all falling apart? But Damien went and posted about this, and his whole thread was hilarious, because he went and he posted earlier today. He's like, so Mike and Jonah have a new band that I know nothing about. Check it out, as I will be doing. And then he's just like joking, but like in the most like gentle, jovial way. He's like, yo, it just hit me. Mike and Jonah are kind of handsome, huh? And he's referring to like the press photo and everything that went out with that. He responds a little bit later. He's like, update. This does not sound like ruination or scare tactic. Comes back and he says, he's like, I dig it. This sounds like a record Mike would have made fun of me for buying at Rick's Collectibles back when we were in our 20s. You know, go see them on tour and tell Jonah I said hi, but not Mike. And just, he kind of keeps going like that. And it's just like, it made me feel happy that they were just, you know, having fun chipping at each other in a friendly way on the internet, and not approaching it negative. With like a bunch of tension, right?
Yeah, passive aggressive, ambiguous negative war.
Yeah. So there you go. So it's interesting that at least Damien is claiming that he had no idea about any of this, because you would imagine that he might. But maybe he doesn't. Maybe that's just the level at which this band operates at this point, is that Damien is definitely, while perhaps the loudest dude in the room, is not necessarily the man with the plan at this point.
Adam, does it signify that Effed Up will continue in the future and is healthy and this is a needed break? Or does it signify fracture within Effed Up, and Effed Up may be collapsing from within?
I read less fracture out of this than I do out of all of the crazy tense back and forth when Dose was released.
Mm.
But hey, we know when we have situations like this, I always read like the most benign part of it, and you always read that
the most sinister, everyone, the knives are out.
So,
well, we'll have to see.
So there we go. Did we talk more about Fucked Up than Danzig?
We might have. We might have. Once in a while, you just gotta,
So that is that's the list of stories. So if I have my notes correct, you are going to play a Mott the Hoople song, and I am going to go to sleep. Is that how this works?
I'm about to play a song that will blow the listener's mind. And if you don't think Mott the Hoople is the greatest after hearing this, then you can just click cancel on subscribing to the Mott the Hoople, the Punk News podcast, because we don't even want you as a fan if you don't think this track. So this is Ian Hunter. Before the Mott the Hoople explosion, the Brain Capers album, which I would argue is as good, if not better, than some of the classic era albums. This is Ian Hunter and Mott the Hoople. And Adam, we should close off that because it's a long song. So is there any final words before we play this jam? Oh, I thought you were beatboxing.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of beatboxing. I don't know. Write us podcast at punknews.org. Help me plan the great Canadian invasion of Wisconsin.
Very well. And Adam White is going on a journey from Canada to Wisconsin. And fittingly, this song is called The Journey.
is a man alone.